So part of being fully spiritually formed is surrendering. What do you think of when you hear the word surrender? Hands raised. What do you think of? Anybody willing to share? What's your thought? What maybe do you think of from your past, or what image comes to mind when you think of the word surrender? Anybody willing to share? Yeah, Kate.
Well, there's an expression in 12-step, let go and let God.
Okay, let go and let God. Okay, so for you, it has a spiritual overtone. All right, others? Yeah, Stacy.
Honestly, it's weakness.
Weakness, yeah. Like kind of a surrender means that I'm weak. Yeah. Anybody else? Any other thoughts? Yeah.
White flag.
White flag. Here. There you go. That's right. White flag. Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Some other force opposing me has been.
Okay.
So I'm choosing to transition to that.
Okay. All right. Yeah.
Not in control.
Not in control. Yeah. Does that sound good to you?
No.
No. Okay. Right. Yeah. It's a woman after my own heart. That's right. Yes. Ian.
Hands up.
Hands up. Yeah. That's right. No, it's true. Hands up. Yeah. It's interesting because we do a lot of body prayers here, and one of the things we like to do quite a bit is put our palms up, and it's actually an act of surrender. And I'm not sure if everybody likes doing that, but it's a way to kind of body, physically say, I'm giving myself to God. Yeah. Anybody else? Okay, so for me, I don't like the word very much. It's a struggle for me. I see this white flag, and that is kind of it's just the impression that comes to me is just kind of giving up, and, you know, I give up, I'm done, I'm sorry, you know, I like the spiritual overtones. I think those are good. But my initial inclination is to see that this doesn't work because I'm horrible at giving up. I mean, horrible at it. This is really why my wife and I stopped playing board games years ago. We just can't do it because she'll win a board game and I'll be like, all right, let's keep going. I guess it's best 4 out of 7 then. And she's like, I'm tired. And then let's say she wins 4 in a row. I'm like, all right, I guess we're going 5 out of 9. I just can't give up. It's just like, let's just keep going. It's hard for me to give up. And I think all of us, to some degree, are not good at giving up. I think part of it's our culture. We have a really cool culture in which I think our culture kind of tells us, society tells us, keep persevering, keep going. That's a good thing. Like, it's a real positive thing. A lot of people get knocked down, and all of us have been knocked down. And we kind of got to get back up and brush ourselves off and keep going. This is a little different, though, when we talk about surrender today. It's a way that I have looked at things that has actually helped me quite a bit. It's helped me quite a bit even when I play board games and things like that. But it's helped me in life to think about what it really means to surrender myself, what it means to even surrender control. And I just want to throw out, what if surrender has nothing to do with giving up? Jesus explained this idea many times, but never so, I think, beautifully and rich as he did in Mark chapter 8. So I'm going to encourage you to go there. Mark chapter 8 is in the Bibles that are somewhere around you. If you'll grab one and flip to page 705, we're going to be in about 5 verses. So go to page 705, Mark chapter 8, verse 31. Mark 8, verse 31. It's on the right side, about halfway down on the column on the right side. Right up there, page 705. Page 705. And just so you kind of know what's going on here, and we're going to go verse by verse in this, because Jesus says a lot in a very short amount of time. Jesus is doing Jesus things. Okay, Jesus just does Jesus things. Goes from village to village, town to town. He's healing. He's teaching people. And then he stops. And as we're about to read this, I just want you to understand, Jesus is in no hurry at this point. In a lot of the places, as we read later with Christ's ministry, there's a sense of urgency, because things are kind of coming to a conclusion, and you just see it's like, okay, I need to tell you this, I need to tell you this. This is a little more at the beginning. There's more of a relaxed atmosphere. Nobody is fully ticked off at him yet, but questions are starting to pop up. So as we go to verse 31 here in a second, I want you to see some of the questions that are starting to pop up for him. And there's murmurings. Are you the Messiah? Are you going to defeat Rome? Because remember, Rome has taken over Israel, and they have kind of oppressed Israel, and they have occupied their state. And Israel's like, we don't want this anymore. So, Jesus, are you going to defeat Rome? Are you going to be a new kind of politician? You know, every, you know, few years we get somebody telling us they're going to be a new kind of politician. In 2016, someone's going to be saying the same thing, or many people are going to be saying the same thing. Nothing new. 2,000 years ago, same questions were asked of Jesus. Are you going to establish some kind of earthly kingdom? These questions are popping up. So this is how Jesus answers them. Go to verse 31. He then began to teach them that the Son of Man must suffer many things and be rejected by the elders, the chief priests, and the teachers of the law, and that he must be killed, and after 3 days rise again. He spoke plainly about this, and Peter took him aside and began to rebuke him. Now stay there. We're going to keep coming back to this, so stay there. We'll just kind of unpack verse 31 real quick. If you go back there, he then began to teach them. I really like Jesus stopping here and having a conversation as these questions are coming out. Because people are really talking about Jesus as a political leader. In our culture, we're starting to hear the murmurings. I'm sure you are, whether you watch news or not. There's all these people coming out of the woodwork as possible presidential candidates. And we're all, I think we're 20 months away from an election. But you're hearing murmurings. Oh, I wonder if this person would be good. I wonder if this person would be good. That's Jesus at this moment. Could this guy be a candidate? Could he be the kind of politician that rises up in Israel, takes over, we go and we go to war against Rome, we defeat them, and we're all free? So these murmurings are starting to go. And so is Jesus kind of ready for political office? This is what makes what Jesus says here so startling. Because I will ask you, tell me a politician who talks like this. He began to teach them, the Son of Man, that is a term he used for himself, that Jesus, I, must suffer many things. And I'm going to be rejected by the elders, Jesus says. And the chief priests are going to reject me, and the teachers of the law, and I'm going to be killed. And after 3 days, rise again. Basically predicts three things that are going to kill his political career. First of all, he says he's going to suffer many things. This isn't just physical, but it's going to be emotional. People are just going to emotionally reject him, including parts of his family. There's going to be times where Jesus feels very alone, very rejected. And there's going to be physical pain he has to endure as well. So he's got this thing, I'm going to suffer many things. Next one, he says he's going to be rejected by the elders, chief priests, and teachers of the law. So let's just go through each of these. The elders, this is a group of people who kind of rule Israel. They're called the Sanhedrin. There's 71 of them. They basically dictate everything that goes on in Israel. All of them will reject Jesus. So we have no political standing whatsoever. Nobody cares about him. This is what's going to happen. He doesn't just stop there. He goes to the chief priests. This is the priestly line of Israel. Big, important people. They've been going for thousands of years. All the chief priests, all the ones who are kind of the higher ups, they're all going to reject Jesus. He will not have a friend there. And then finally, the teachers of the law. These are the very black and white people. If you remember, we've been talking about the Jesus Creed. It's the teacher of the law. One of them, an expert in the religious law, tried to trap Jesus with this question. Teacher, which is the most important commandment in the law of Moses? We've talked about that the last 2 weeks. It's these teachers of the law, black and white. They think in this way. All of them are going to reject Jesus too. Every single person rejects Jesus. This is no political campaign. There's no money coming in. There's no posters to be made. This guy's going to be eviscerated. And you can feel it. Oh, and one other thing. I must be killed, he says. He lays it all out. You follow me, you get suffering, rejection, and death. It's not the best way to rally followers. It'll be interesting to see if any of these political candidates put that on their posters. Follow me, rejection, suffering, death. I'm in. Can you see why people started to, stray away from Jesus at times? Suffering, rejection, death. He speaks very plainly, it says in verse 32. Let's read that again. He spoke plainly about this. And Peter takes him aside and he begins to rebuke him. It's kind of interesting that Mark makes the point to say that Jesus is speaking plainly, because there's these times when Jesus uses parables and stories, and sometimes people don't fully understand what Jesus is saying. Mark wants us to know Jesus was really, really specific here. No parables, no stories, no anecdotal evidence. He just says it. This is what's going to happen. And Peter, who hears this, gets ticked off. Peter, one of his closest friends, one of his disciples, comes up to him and he rebukes him. The word rebuke means to admonish, to correct. It's what a parent does to a child. Peter takes on the parent role. He comes to Jesus and he goes, "All right, little guy, we don't talk like that. And we definitely don't talk like that in public." I almost think of Peter as being kind of his political handler, you know? Like, yeah, no, you know, yeah, well, you can say that stuff in private, but when you get in front of the crowds, you got to say things a little different. We need their votes. I've been watching way too much House of Cards, if any of you are into. Peter doesn't want to hear this kind of talk. Do we? No, really, do you right now want to hear this kind of talk? Do you like this? Because Jesus says all this stuff, and I think most of the people, and maybe you do this as well, but I think Peter did this, we go right past that last little thing Jesus said. I'm going to read verse 31 again. Read it with me. "He then began to teach them, 'The Son of Man must suffer many things, be rejected by the elders and the chief priests and the teachers of the law, and he's going to be killed.' And then he adds this little thing, 'And after 3 days, rise again.'" Jesus, every time Jesus talks about all of this stuff, he's always putting hope out there. There's always hope. But sometimes we get so stuck in whatever's going on and what we want and the suffering and the rejection and all of these things, we forget the hope. Peter forgets it. Here's how Jesus reacts to his political advisor. Verse 33. "But when Jesus turned and looked at his disciples, he rebuked Peter." Now, he doesn't just say, "I don't like what you have to say." "Get thee behind me, Satan," Jesus says to Peter. "You don't have in mind the concerns of God, but merely human concerns." I mean, Jesus goes hard after him. That little phrase, get behind me, Satan, is basically a phrase of saying, when you hear Satan, he's talking in general about Satan. We use other words, devil, evil, sin. We use all these words just talk about this idea of things that are against God, that are not the way God wants things to be. Basically, Peter, you don't care about the good things. You're worried about all of this stuff. And I get it. I'm Peter. I don't want to suffer. I don't. I don't want to be rejected. I definitely don't want to be killed. That all sounds horrible. But I definitely also ignore that little piece, "Oh, after 3 days, I'll rise again." This thing we're all going towards, resurrection. Sunday's coming. "Get behind me, Satan. You do not have in mind the concerns of God, but merely human concerns." It's a pretty big statement. What does it mean? Well, verse 34, Jesus tries to explain it to us. "So then he," Jesus, "calls the crowd to him along with his disciples." So everybody's there. And by the way, the crowds have grown. There's not just the dozen disciple. There's dozens of people, then hundreds of people. And I don't know by this time if there are thousands, but there are times when there are thousands of people. So he calls them all together. He wants to make a big speech. This is not a victory speech. He wants to challenge them. "Whoever wants to be my disciple must deny themselves, take up their cross, and follow me. For whoever wants to save their life will lose it. But whoever loses their life for me and for the gospel, for the good news, for the good things, will save it." So Jesus calls everyone together, and he says a pretty stunning thing. It's not just him that needs to go through all this stuff. Disciples need to go through this. Disciple is a simple word. It just means a follower of Jesus. I'm a disciple of Jesus. I'm a follower of Christ. So he's speaking to me. He's speaking to all of us. Let's look at these things that he says. I'm just going to put them up here on the screen. Deny yourself. You get to suffer rejection just like Jesus. For us, it's pretty simple. Rid yourself of selfishness. He gives another one. Take up your cross. Suffering like Jesus did. The cross was not known by the followers of Christ at that moment yet to be what we know it to be. But it was still a barbaric punishment for anybody who was going against the Roman government. Jesus was not trying to establish any type of government or rule or kingdom on the earth. He was talking about higher things, bigger things, not just human concerns. He encourages us, do the same. Deny yourself, take up your cross, follow me. Like Jesus, you get to die. Now, you may not physically die. Not many people die in the way Jesus did. But you die to self. Paul took this pretty far. I really liked the way Paul said in Galatians 2:20. You can read the full, all of Galatians 2 later if you'd like in these Bibles. By the way, if you don't own a Bible, feel free to take one of those home, put your name in it, and keep it. It's yours. We want you to have a Bible. We'd love you to read them. I've been crucified with Christ, Paul said. I no longer live, but Christ lives in me. For Paul, his message was, I don't even see myself anymore. I have nailed myself up to the cross with Christ. When you see me, I want you to see Christ. Deny self. Take up your cross. Follow me. And this thing that Peter missed and some people miss, you live in hope with this. See, this is not giving up. This isn't raising a white flag, because there's no hope in that. When you surrender to the enemy, you know, on a battlefield or something like that, and you could see it in that Hitler clip, nobody's happy. You have to give up. You may even be going to some sort of prison or some sort of camp or something like that when you think about the stories over the centuries. This is different. If I deny myself, if I take up my cross, if I follow Jesus, I get to live in hope. There's actually hope in this. It's a pretty amazing thing. Verse 35. I'm going to read it one more time. For whoever wants to save their life will lose it, but whoever loses their life for me and for the gospel will save it. Why do we do this in the world? Because when we surrender control, you get to find freedom. Surrender here isn't about giving up in a white flag. It's actually about freedom. No longer do I have to worry about things like what's in it for me, or I've got to prove myself, or do people like me enough? Am I wearing the right things? Am I saying the right things? Do I have to pretend I have it all together? I don't have to be perfect. All of that now is wrapped up in who I am in Christ. That's where I belong. Jesus gives this same surrendering message over and over again in his talks, that following Christ is about surrendering control of my life. Think about the Jesus Creed that we keep going over. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your soul, with all your strength, and with all your mind. This was Jesus' answer to what really matters. What are the rules that really matter? This is the only rule, he says, really matters. And he has a second one that we're going to be going over. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your soul, all your strength, and all your mind. To love God means to surrender control of all aspects of life. Let's look at this. If I love the Lord with all my heart and soul, that means I'm going to surrender who I am personally. My heart, my soul. Thomas Merton has a quote talking about this. The inner self is not just part of us, you know, of our being, like it's some part, like a motor in a car. It's our entire reality, our inner self, on its highest and most personal level. It's our spiritual life when it's most alive. It is the life by which everything else in us lives and moves. Personal surrender is the secret to every single genuine love there is. Every family relationship, acquaintance, friendship, co-worker, fellow student, even compassion I show people, comes from personal surrender. Until I know how to surrender personally, it is really hard to cultivate long-term relationships. They seem to eventually go away. The next one, surrender physically. When I surrender personally, I find freedom because I find real relationships. When I surrender physically, though, this is an interesting little phrase. What Jesus says here is with all your strength. It's actually a Jewish idiom, and It's an interesting understanding of what Jesus is saying here, and you'd have to understand the Jewish language. But all he's saying here is you surrender all of your physical, your body, and all of your physical stuff, resources. Basically, all you have, you surrender to God. For Jesus, this would have meant things like it matters that you care about your physical health. For Jesus, this would have been things like surrendering our money and our stuff to God's use. This would have been things like surrendering our bodies to understand sexual pleasure as a positive thing and not a negative thing. This would have been for Jesus understanding that we remove vanity and the need to always look good and be perfect. That we surrender this. I don't know if there's anything opposite to our culture more than loving the Lord your God with all your strength. To surrender physically in our culture is tough. The last one. Surrender mentally. Your mind. There's a couple of things to think about here. Sometimes there are people who are too caught up in their mind to be much good at all. I had a guy 2 years ago that I had a doctoral seminar with. And he was brilliant. I mean, he was just brilliant. I was actually ahead of him in the program. And he was way more, he just had a larger understanding and a deeper care about very specific things in the Bible. And he really knew his stuff. And I was with him for 5 straight days. We were in this program where it was 5 straight days. It was very intensive. It was a really cool time. And I liked everybody there, but this guy, he was petulant, critical. He was judgmental of people who didn't agree with him. And honestly, he was just kind of mean. He was just kind of mean. And at one point, I disagreed with him, and he yelled at me, literally, in the seminar, in front of all the other people. I swear, he just yelled at me, like right at me. And I remember thinking in my head, this guy doesn't know who he's dealing with. Like, I remember thinking that. Because my competitiveness started to go up and that lack of wanting to surrender started to go up. And I was like, I am going to tear you a new one, sir. And I could feel it coming. I could feel it. And I remember telling my wife later that night, because this was all going on, I was so pissed off. I could just feel it. And he was embarrassing me and I did not like this and I just disagreed with him. And I remember my Jesus creedness coming up as well. I do. I just remember it. And I remember it calming me. And I had to take that competitiveness and put it down. And the Jesus creedness was coming up. And I had to love this guy. And as that happened, I remember that I thought about this guy. Brilliant guy, really brilliant. I don't know how much use he is for God. I really don't. And I'm not trying to judge him. But I sort of looked at him and I remember just thinking in my head, and I never dealt with him or anything. I just kind of moved on. But I remember thinking, this guy's so caught up in his mind that he's not much good. He thinks he's so intelligent that I don't know how much he's really doing to help people. The other side of this, though, is there's people that question God constantly, constantly. And it starts to make them useless. You got to be careful of that with your mind. I understand this. I have huge questions for God. I want to know things about the Bible that don't make sense. I want to talk about the problem of evil, because I got some big issues with the problem of evil. I want to talk about some specific questions about what is actually right and wrong. All the questions you guys all come up and ask me, as if I'm supposed to know, I want to ask that of God. Like, what exactly? I want to know. But by focusing on only the questions in my mind makes me useless to sacrificially love people like Jesus did. Jesus calls us to surrender mentally. Let go of some of that stuff. And it's a mystery, I understand it. But Jesus' call is for us to surrender all we are, personal, physical, a total expression of love. And what happens is that surrender actually brings freedom and hope and the capacity to love. That's what Peter was missing, and we don't have to. Because with Jesus, there's always hope. So I'm going to close today by putting those things back up there. Surrender personally. Surrender physically. Surrender mentally. And all I'm going to do is I'm just going to step away, as we do sometimes, for maybe 30 seconds or so, and just ask you to maybe get with God a little bit where you're at. And maybe through each of those, your heart and soul or your strength or your mind, is there one of those you have a hard time surrendering control of? And by not surrendering, maybe it's not making you as useful as you could be. Maybe not as sacrificial as you could be. Maybe not as other-focused as Christ was. So take a moment. We're going to head to the Eucharist in just a few minutes. But take a moment, and right now, just talk with God. And think of any area that you might want to surrender control of to find a little more freedom and hope. And then I'll close us in prayer. God, thank you for loving us enough to talk real with us. There's something about your words and your life that is inspiring to us at the journey. We go back to them over and over again. Because they are different. There is something so unique about the way you talk and about the way you lived. And for me, I just want to be more like that. And I find myself sometimes, God, in that place where it's hard to want to surrender. But I've also found, and this is just for me personally, God, that those places I don't surrender, I tend to hold tightly, and I don't make myself very useful. So my prayer for us as a church is that we think about some of those places where we're not surrendering control. We're not allowing you, God, to more fully take us to a more rich and deep place of freedom and hope. Maybe it's personal stuff, heart and soul. Maybe it's physical, our strength, our physical resources and who we are. And maybe it's our minds, that we're too in our minds to be of much use at times. And maybe it's something else that is popping into our heads. Whatever it is, God, help us even now to think about ways that we can be a little more open to what you have for us. And ultimately, God, thank you for surrendering. Because in doing so, you rose 3 days later, and that's the hope we live with. It's in your name, Christ, we pray these things. Amen.